Mayor and Council, Matt Holzapfel, Director of Public Works. I'd like to give a brief preview or a situation report on our pump station number one and the 300 horsepower pump that is currently out of service. Just kind of, I know all of you are probably aware of what's going on out there, but for the public's benefit, I'd like to kind of just go through the chronology of what's occurred. On Thursday, the 22nd of June at 10:30 p.m., that's in the evening, city staff received a SCADA alarm from our pump station that one of the 300 horsepower pumps had automatically turned off due to a fault being triggered. City staff immediately was dispatched to the pump station to determine the cause of the alarm and related auto shutdown of the pumps. During the night, staff determined that all electrical functions were normal and that the alarm was triggered due to a motor overload from a seized pump shaft. The diagnosis was confirmed by our electrical vendor in their early morning hours. So staff went out there, figured out what was going on, eliminated the electrical side of the equation, and figured out it was the pump itself. We did call out our electrical contractor that's very familiar with the pump station, actually built most of the electrical work out there. They went through the staff's analysis, did tests of their own, and did confirm that it was the pump itself and that the shaft had seized and was had some sort of friction in the shaft. These pumps are the original pumps of the pump station that were manufactured in September of 2004 and when installed in 2005. So they've been working for the city of Heath for about 18 years. Just to kind of give you an idea of how much work they perform, the rotation speed of those pumps when running is 1785 RPM rotations per minute. So if you just calculate that they've run maybe 10% of the time during their 18 year life period, they've probably gone through 1.6 billion revolutions. So things do wear out. Friday morning, we did arrange with our pump vendor, which is Peterson Pump and Motor, for a crane to come out Monday morning to pull the pump for disassembly and analysis to determine the cause of the shaft binding. With one of the two 300 horsepower pumps out of operation, the city is limited in peak pumping and total average daily pumping capacity to roughly 4.5 million gallons per day. We can surge a little bit more than that, but over a daytime period, that's about what we can pump. Staff did meet on the morning of Friday, June 23rd, to work through impacts to the water system and to figure out the appropriate level of water restrictions to impose on Heath citizens and businesses and the messaging needed to get that information out to the citizens. With staff worked together with our PR folks to finalize a press release that went out Friday evening, or actually early afternoon. And we started using the various information channels to inform citizens of the water emergency and declared a stage two restriction. We did also place signs out, over 30 signs out throughout the city, notifying citizens that water restrictions were in force, and did notify the city of Rockwall, the North Texas Municipal Water District, and the TCEQ as required by regulations. And I'll go through the stage two restrictions in a little bit more detail in the discussion. To kind of give you an idea of what's going on the pump station, most of you, when we talked about this several months ago, water comes in from across the street from the Rockwall pump station, comes through our transfer pumps. We have 250 horsepower transfer pumps that basically just moves water between the Rockwall 3 million gallon tank to the city of Heath 3 million gallon tank. It's then re-pumped out of the ground storage tank through our distribution pumps that pump into the 24 inch main that brings water into the city. We have two 300 horsepower pumps and a 200 horsepower pump. One of these 300 horsepower pump has failed.
And so that's what we're trying to fix out there. To kind of give you an idea, this is an actual drawing of the original construction. These pumps sit in what we call a can. It's just a big metal cylinder that sits about 30 feet in the ground. It's fed off of a big, what we call a manifold, that brings water to each of those three pump cans. And this yellow part here is the long pump shaft with the electric motor sitting on top. So when we got out there, we troubleshooted the motor and all the electric controls in the pump house, figured out those are all working properly. Could not turn the shaft. We actually put pipe wrenches on the shaft through this little access port, tried to push it, and we could move it, but just barely. There's something binding it, preventing its rotation. And if you know anything about motors, when they're under a heavy load, the motors start drawing a lot more power. And that's what our SCADA system sensed and shut down that motor. So we didn't do any damage to the motor and electrical controls. And so what we had to do is disassemble that motor. We took the 300 horsepower electrical motor off the electrical controls. And then we had to pull this 35 foot long motor assembly out of that can and set it off to the side on a trailer. And that assembly is what's been taken to our motor vendor for disassembly and analysis of what's going on inside this shaft. These are the, we have a three stage impellers. The impellers are just basically like a big turbine type thing that moves the water, then a long shaft that's connected to the motor.
In this diagram, the outlet line is going off to the left there. We're going
out. This is the outlet line that comes to this manifold, and this manifold then going back to this, I'm sorry, in your way. So it pumps in here to the manifold, goes through a valve in the pump, which raises it up to this level up here, and it's pushed into the pump house and into this another manifold for the discharge manifold that takes it into the sink. Does that make sense?
So the failure is in the pump shaft.
Yes, that's what we believe. That's what we believe is going on. We hope that's the situation and that there's nothing wrong with the impellers.
And you said that the contractor has already picked up this 30-foot pump shaft and taken it to their facility?
Correct, sir. Monday morning, we had the crane out on the site. They had to rent a crane. They're pretty hard. We initially thought it would be Wednesday before we could even get a crane, but they kept calling over the weekend, did secure a crane that could mobilize to the site Monday morning, which is what we wanted. And we were able to pull it. We had it out of the can and on the trailer, and it left the site about 11:30 Monday morning. So it's already at their shop. They're pulling it apart. There's a number of stages on that where you can actually unbolt it and start disassembling the whole thing and looking at each of the components, the bearings. You can imagine there's a number of bearings up and down that shaft to make sure that 30-foot tall shaft is rotating properly and balanced in a balanced fashion. And so they're looking at each of those bearings, looking at the impellers, making sure there's no damage to those. We think they told us, but they should have that analysis done by tomorrow evening and be able to call us and tell us, okay, this is what we found. This is what it's going to take to repair it. And this is the time frame we think it's we can have it repaired and hopefully then bringing it back out on site, reinstall it. Now, when you reinstall a pump, you have to go through a startup process to make sure you don't damage anything and it's properly calibrated. There's actually settings. You have to make sure that the impellers are not resting on those bowls and things. It's fairly complicated. And because it is rotating at such a fast speed, we have to make sure everything's balanced. So it's just like balancing tires on a car. You have to put weights and make sure everything is just right so that over an 18-year period, it doesn't vibrate itself to death or do something that might shorten its life. So we think if it's just a bearing, they gave us an initial estimate, if that's what they find, and we're hoping that is the case, that it could be 2 to 3 weeks. and they could have it back out there. That's the best case scenario. If it's something a little bit more complicated, one of the impellers is damaged, for instance, then it could be up to 2 to 3 months to repair it. So we're hoping for just a bearing, and it's been there for a while. As I mentioned, it's done a lot of work in the last 18 years. So we're hoping it's just a bearing that needs to be replaced. I do want to just, before I go on to discuss the stage two restrictions, just give a shout out and publicly recognize Larry Dunham, the manager of utilities, and Johnny Driggers, who are utilities crew leader, in their efforts in response to this pump failure. Both these gentlemen were called back to work last Thursday night after a full day's work. They got the call at 10:30, probably as they were about ready to go to bed, and they realized there was a problem. So Larry called Johnny, and they both went to the pump site and worked diligently through the night to analyze what was going on. I got a phone call about 11 or 12:30 that night that what was going on, and they were calling the electrical contractor to confirm their diagnosis. But they worked all that night. They worked the whole next day and did not get to go home till about 4 in the afternoon after another full day's work. So both those gentlemen worked about a 36-hour day without any sleep. And that's what Public Works employees do. So I just want to give a shout out to those two gentlemen that the city is blessed to have such dedicated professional Public Works employees. On top of that, Larry Dunham because we're still dealing with other issues at the pump station, he's actually delayed going on a family vacation today. He was actually supposed to leave last night to go on a family vacation. So he's here today dealing with other issues. Again, putting the city ahead of even his family to take care of problems. That kind of just tells you the people that I'm very proud to work with. You have great staff. I'm going to just go through very quickly the stage two restrictions, again, for the sake of the audience, because I'm sure council is very aware of them and have probably read through those restrictions a number of times. But since lawn irrigation is by far the greatest demand on our water system during the summer, the focus on the stage two restrictions is on watering of landscape and lawns with irrigation systems and sprinklers. We have basically told the citizens they can only water their lawns one day a week, and there's assigned days of the week. And we told them that they can water things like plants and foundations and things of that nature, as long as they're using soaker hoses or handheld hoses as well. What can be confusing to the citizens is there are a number of homes along the lake that take irrigation water through a permit from the city of Dallas out of Lake Ray Hubbard. There's also a lot of people in the city of Heath that are on irrigation systems, and some of those septic systems. And some of those septic systems have sprinkler systems to put the effluent that goes through the septic tanks once it's treated out on the lawns. And that can look like they're irrigating with city water, but it's essentially treated effluent that's okay to put onto lawns. So we're aware of those issues that are out there. There's also bigger entities that have private wells or lakes and things of that nature that, again, don't impact the city water system. So as we go about our enforcement activities and take phone calls from the citizens, we have to be very careful what we're doing out there is to make sure we're not penalizing people that have an irrigation system that's running on some of those other sources that is not coming from the city of Heath potable water system out there. We did meet as a staff early Monday morning to kind of figure out the stage two restrictions and how we're going to go about the enforcement process. So I want to walk through the enforcement process a little bit. Our city manager designated that we would not go into enforcement mode unless we exceeded 3.8 million gallon per day in any of the previous days.
Overnight enforcement.
Overnight enforcement.
We are currently in enforcement mode.
Right. Because Monday we had a water use of 4.2 and change million gallons per day. So actually, even after the restrictions went into force, the water uses climbed over a million gallons. So people are still using their water. So we did send out enforcement personnel, mainly code enforcement folks, at 6 a.m. this morning. They basically are driving parts of the city, and what they're trying to do is look for instances of watering outside the restriction. So they're looking at addresses and finding out people that have evidence of irrigation systems going, but it wasn't their turn to irrigate. They're also just looking generally for obvious leaks that may be occurring out there too. One of our Lisa, our building official, she actually went down to one of our schools for Linda Lyons Elementary and noticed a ton of water flooding across the parking lot, and their fire sprinkler system inside the building was leaking, coming out the door of the fire sprinkler riser and running across the parking lot, and they had no idea. So those are things that we're catching as well, trying to let the citizens know, okay, we'll shut off the water. You need to get a plumber in here, fix this thing so that we're not wasting water. They did issue around 40 tickets this morning, notifications. Violators are receiving a taped notice on their door. I'll kind of give you an example of one of those here. And I'll take one of these. But when a violation is noticed, we're taking painter's tape, make sure we don't damage anything. Take one and pass the extra down. Thank you so much. But we are taping those notices to the door that a violation has been identified at that property. And again, trying to educate them what they're supposed to be doing, and notify them that they will receive a letter of violation. Due to the seriousness of the situation, it was decided there would be no warning citations. But all first citations we would request a fine. Although fines can be assessed up to $2,000 a day, generally the first offenders, the fine is $250. And if they appeal for actual court hearing, it can go up to $330 with added court costs. The staff has recommend that the fine be incrementally increased to $500 for second offenses and up to $2,000 for third and subsequent offenses. This information will be transmitted to our municipal judges and prosecutors so that they understand what staff would prefer. Staff has not yet imposed any restrictions on construction operations, such as water injection of soil for foundations, watering of pads, or watering of subgrade for roadway construction, as this would effectively stop much of the construction in the city with significant economic consequences. Staff is seeking city council direction on that particular issue because it has obviously a great impact to businesses, to the construction in the city. And it may have legal consequences as well, as there obviously would be a pushback on that. We have had numerous calls and emails regarding the restrictions, and staff has been giving direction to people, mainly people calling just wanting clarification on what the restrictions mean. We have had a few calls for asking for exemptions due to special circumstances. We're trying to be reasonable in those situations. A lot of people have put down a lot of sod in the last few months, and they're worried about losing that sod. So we're asking them that they can continue to water that sod more than once a week, as long as there's no runoff to any of the paved surfaces, and that they keep it just so that the sod doesn't die and remains viable. So they are emailing me or calling me, and we're giving them a written email usually in response. I've done very little in the last day and a half, but answer phone calls and emails. There's quite a few people that are seeking clarification or exemptions, or just wanting to call and express their discontent with the water restrictions. And just another little bit of news that I want to make you aware of. One of our transfer pumps, we realized Monday, was making noises too. And so we have shut down one of the transfer pumps. We can run the transfer between the two ground storage tanks with a one pump. We always run just one pump. We never run two at a time, but we've taken that out of service, and we're getting a crane out there also to pull that one to see what's going on there. There's actually, when that pump shuts down, there's a huge hammer that literally shakes the ground when it shuts down. We don't think it's the pump. It may be the actual motor. The motor's got a clutch in it that prevents counter flow of the water, and we think it may be stuck. And so when it's shutting down very suddenly instead of gradually just spinning down. So we're going to have to examine that pump as well. So out of five pumps on the pump station, two are experiencing problems. And we're trying to take care of that. One of the things we're looking at is, we had under design a project to replace the 200 horsepower pump with a third 300 horsepower pump. The plans are virtually done with that. We were going to bid that in the next few months, but we're, in order to expedite that, we think we're going to start taking phone calls and try and get some phone quotes on doing that project. We'll bring, if we get quotes that we think are reasonable and we find a candidate contractor that's willing to take on that project fairly quickly, we'll bring that back to council for an emergency resolution approving an emergency project to expedite that project. If ordering a new pump and getting it in is still anywhere from a 9 to 12 week process if we put in the order today. So it's not going to be a quick resolution, but if it does give us another 300 horsepower pump and motor in an expedited fashion. So we'll get that going. We've already contacted Freeman Milliken, and they're going to be making phone calls as soon as the plans and specs are to a point where we can start distributing to a select group of contractors. With that, I'll open it up to questions from the city council.
Just a quick addition. Also, we are looking for direction regarding pools. What our building official is doing is personally calling anyone who has taken out a pool permit recently or a landscaping permit to let them know what the restrictions are and to ask them not to hold off and not plaster right now, because we are asking that they not fill pools. What we want to do is reject all new pool applications for the time being, but that's not a call that I feel comfortable making without some clear direction that you all are comfortable with that. So this would just be a temporary moratorium on pool permits, saying we are not allowing it because you will not be able to fill at this time. The same with the construction and the injection of the water. I don't feel comfortable making that call from this chair. That's something that I need some direction from you all on.
When are we going to know the prognosis?
Hopefully Wednesday, late afternoon, something at that time is when they thought they could have it broken down in an analysis back to us of what it's going to take.
So as of tomorrow, we'll basically know how long it'll be down for?
I would say Thursday, because Thursday is the next business day that we can start making some decisions based off the diagnosis.
Well, first of all, man, thank you. You do an excellent job of explaining this, making it so we can all understand it. It's not Greek to anybody up here, I don't think. The ask that I just want to quantify the ask here, and it is that for building swimming pools and injecting under, the injection that we do under foundations. You're asking for our blessing on a moratorium on that?
Well, remember, that's not a huge part of our water use. Irrigation, by every measure, is the bulk of our water use during the summer. Yes, ma'am.
Do we know what the usage was today? Yesterday, you said 4.2. We haven't gotten our numbers yet for today.
Larry reports those every morning in an email to us. But
because I know that Monday was the big day last year that we realized everybody turned on their sprinklers.
It's dispersed at this point. Actually,
it's more time centered this time. It's more midnight to 9 a.m. every day. As opposed to just Mondays.
I think it's going to be another big day because at noon he gives me a phone call, lets me know what our usage is up to noon. And we are over 3 million gallons at noon. So typically our greatest use happens from midnight to around 9 o'clock in the morning. So that's when all the irrigation systems are triggering, which is what you want. Because you don't want irrigation during the day where most of it's going to evaporate. If you're going to irrigate, you want the water to be used efficiently. So that is the right time to irrigate. But that puts a great demand on the system during that early morning segment. But he calls me around noon, and today we were over 3 million gallon at the noon hour. So the afternoon is it starts tapering off, but I'm guessing we're going to be over 4 to 4.5 again, close to that today.
Do we think that a lot of people still don't know that this is in effect?
It's at the entrance of every neighborhood. You would have to not leave your house to not know. We have had some people on vacation.
Yeah.
Who have gotten back and have had a notice on their door. And so they've called and said, hey, I just got back. So it could be some of that stuff. And maybe people haven't changed their timers. Mm-hmm. So it could be some of that. Matt, can you speak to us if we hit that around that 4.5 because of the valve shut off with Rockwall, how that plays into the whole scenario? Well,
the Rockwall thing is not going to hurt us because they'll give us 6 million, but that's probably more than we can pump. So right. Rockwall restrictions are not going to hurt it. It's just going to be our ability to get water into the system when it's needed. Now, what we're trying to do is manage the system to during that afternoon lull period, we're still running basically both pumps. Now, the pumps themselves have a control system called a variable speed drive, but it basically, or variable frequency drive is the actual term, but it's basically allows us to dial in and vary the output of each of those other two pumps. So we are trying to fill these elevated tanks, the 500,000 here near City Hall, the south tank, and our 1.5 million at the north tank. We're trying to get those maximum full because water in elevated tanks is like pre-pumped water, mm-hmm. Okay? We can draft off of that, and it helps supplement the pumps that are down. So we're trying to manage it by maximizing our filling of the elevated tanks during the afternoon and early evening hours so that when that peak comes after midnight, we're not only using our full pumping capacity at the pump station, but we're using that capacity that's already been stored in the elevated tanks and we're drawing that down. What concerns me is if this is just demand from the citizens, if we have a main break or a fire, or heaven forbid, both, there can be an instantaneous, very high demand that could really deplete the system very quickly. And that's what keeps us up at night, is worrying about these other contingencies. It's very dry out there. The south wind has been howling, and the conditions this week we're in the 100+ degrees all week until the weekend. And that's probably going to continue for the next few weeks. So the conditions are rife for, brush fires and things of that nature. So we're also very concerned about that. We have to have enough reserve to protect, to make sure that if the chief has to fight a fire, we have the resources out there for him to do so.
So what is the percentage roughly of construction water versus typical or normal irrigation water? What ballpark percentage?
I don't have those numbers for you, sir, but I would have to guess, looking at how much the irrigation influences and what our winter usage is, it's probably less than 500,000 gallons, probably far less than that a day. So it's a percentage, but it's not a huge percentage. the irrigation is what we got to get a handle on.
Okay. You know, but there's a, you know, and this is where I come back to, you know, you've got the optics of, you know, I drive through Heath Golf and Yacht, and I've got a guy with a, you know, basically a fire hose coming off of one of those things, spraying it in front of, you know, for 3 or 4 hours spraying it in front of those. And the guy says, I'm going to let my lawn die while this guy goes out and does construction. And I, you know, that's, you know, whether it's a huge percentage, which we really can't measure, quite honestly, yeah. Because you don't know until you go out and actually get that.
The reading from the meters.
Correct, yeah, the ring from the meter. And I drive by one every day now. And I can tell you that there's usually somebody pulling some sort of water out of it. And that's the bad optics that I see. And whether
I'm getting phone calls just saying exactly that, sir. Yeah. The people that are irate are pointing to those issues exactly.
And I have no problem with your ask of let's put a moratorium on it. I know you're building a swimming pool, but I've never completely agreed with this whole we're going to take water and inject it underneath a house just to build a foundation. We didn't do that for 100 years, and and now it's commonplace. But we have limited water, and I could even see putting a moratorium on that every summer, and saying and doing that. I'm okay with that if we wrote that into our ordinances, because again, I'm not going to ask our citizens who have done a great job. We put this up, and whether they know they're supposed to turn it down. I mean, the house I'm in, I know the sprinkler system comes on and it comes on my phone and it says I'm smart and I'm not going to go off until this, and I skip this week because it rained and the whole bit. Oh, I can't even program my damn sprinkler, and I have a software company. So, this is I see where people are coming from. You kind of set it and leave it. Everybody's not watching that every day of their life, but what they do see is somebody out there with a hose or filling up a truck, yes, or doing whatever else in the middle of 100-degree heat. That's bad optics, and I think it's just bad practice in general.
I have a question. Do we require a permit when they drain a pool and do work?
I don't
believe so.
Because it's really about the building process of it, not whatever they're going to rehab.
But when they drain it, they got to refill it. Mm-hmm.
They do.
Yeah, but
and so that's how. Okay, so we wouldn't know.
No.
And again, that goes back to why we're trying to move to the smart meters, so that we do know this and we have right. The data. We're still working on the rail a little bit here, and I wish. We all wish we weren't, and if we had all that data, and I truly believe that
would be
95% of our citizens, if they knew that and they knew where the water was going, they all want to participate. And this problem isn't going to go away.
Right.
This is there's limited water.
The other part of this
is we're at stage two because of a system failure. But the way we were trending, we were going to be at stage two this week or next week, because the day that this happened, we hit over 4.5. A couple of days before that, we were at 4.3. And we've all been preparing for this since about March. So we knew this was coming down the pipeline. So, just for the community's sake, this issue may be repaired, hopefully again, best case scenario, 2 to 3 weeks. But that may not mean that we come fully out of stage two. We may not be at that point yet. So I just want to be clear. We're in this because of a system failure, but we could have very well been in this because of just a demand issue.
Yes. It's hot.
I think all of that information and everything you learned tonight, I'm assuming you're gonna start blasting that out tomorrow.
We will continue to blast some of, we'll blast that out. We have a website, a landing page on our website where we put a lot more detailed information, but we'll continue to give this advantage because she knows how to put it in kind of digestible, understandable bits. We can't put everything out the way it's been here because it's a little different when you don't have someone standing there explaining it to you, but we'll work with PR to figure out how to get
this. Okay. Unfortunately, this is going to be how we blast it out. I'm in a different home, and I had no idea what my watering day was, and I've got a smart meter that tells me when it's going to water.
Just don't be one of the ones that
you. Yeah, I really don't want one of these. But it's very helpful because I know that I'm on Monday, so I will go back and see if I can figure this out. But, you know, and most people don't know. And, you know, and so, you know, that, you know, we can't throw stones because most people go, oh, stage two. Well, what does that mean? Well, I'm going to go home and watch TV or I'm going to go do whatever. I mean, so until we make them boil water, people really aren't there. But I am fully behind whatever moratoriums we need to put on new construction. I get everybody else's feedback on that.
Well, yeah, I mean, I agree. I think, you know, you've heard me preach numerous times about the heartache I have with existing residents having to pay in some form or fashion for new development. So, and this is an example of, or, you know, what we're discussing right now is an example of existing residents have to let the lawns die, but a new construction is allowed to proceed. And so, yeah, I'm in full agreement with those kind of moratoriums. But I do want to get a little bit more into the weeds on some numbers here.
Yes, sir.
Before we have any action or any direction.
Sure.
So I guess I'm curious, and maybe you probably don't know this maybe off the top of your head, but what is the, you know, the MTBF, the life expectancy of these systems? This guy's been running for 18 years.
I mean, give me a second.
Yeah, that's roughly about 16,000 hours at your 10% duty cycle. What's the mean time between failures? Is it?
I honestly don't know, sir. I know most utilities run these things till failure,
right?
But they have enough pumps, you know, enough reserve capacity in their system that taking a single pump out of service during a peak time is not an issue. In my previous employer, we put in pumps. I built a pump station in 83, and every one of those pumps is still active and running. At least it was up to a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. So they can run for 40 years. It's just, you know, it's kind of the quality of the pump and how it's balanced and maintained over the years. But they can have extremely long service lives. Usually you pull pumps because the impellers wear down and you start losing your efficiency on the motor. We just had an engineer from Freeman Millican help us. Basically, we brought them out there because we know one of our meters at the pump station is reading erroneously. I started looking at these numbers on a daily basis, and they're all over the map. And from day to day, the readings are noisy, but over a long period of time, they should balance out, and they weren't. So I knew one of the meters was wrong. So we brought them out there to do a stick test, basically just see the volume in the tank fluctuating and measure against the metered output and compare the two. And the meter was reading significantly low. So we're ignoring that meter. That's the meter that has the trans or the demand into the city. But one of the things we did do at that same time is we calibrated and did a pump curve for the pumps that are out there to compare it against the original pump curve to see if we've lost efficiency, which would indicate wear on the impellers. Mm-hmm. And we're actually looking pretty good. So after 18 years of pumping, those impellers look almost like the day they were installed. So that's a really good thing. Mm-hmm. And usually that when you pull a pump, it's not because of the bearings or something, it's because your impellers have worn out and you're way below your pump curve, so you're pumping inefficiently and it's costing the city money because it requires more electricity then. So
it looks like, or it sounds like, that roughly with all pumps in place, all 800 horsepower in place, we get roughly about 8 million gallons a day capacity.
Yes, we could actually go probably up to almost 10. I think they're rated at that, but when you start adding pumps, you don't get an increment because they're pushing against themselves. They're actually start working against themselves. So for each pump you add into the system, you actually get less output for the same amount of horsepower. So okay,
so for the remaining 500, remaining two pumps, so 300 and 200, we're roughly at 4.5 to 5 million gallons a day.
is what we think we can
okay.
push out.
You know, one of the questions I've gotten asked is why don't we have spares? And my answer so far has been, well, when you built your house, did you build in spare air conditioners?
Yeah.
Of course you didn't, because these things are going to last 18 years.
When was the last time your air conditioner broke in the winter? Yeah, right. They always break in the summer.
Right, exactly. Well,
when they're under stress, right.
But it's a fair question, you know, do we, and it goes back to my reliability or my MTBF question, mm-hmm. mean time between failures, you know, that factors in your calculation of having spare parts. But when you talk about equipment that runs for 18 years or 43 years, then the calculations work out that you don't keep a lot of spare parts.
Right.
So, you know, again, I'm trying to grapple with the messaging of why don't we have spare parts? Or why don't you have an extra 30-foot, you know, drive shaft laying around? Well, because the same reason you don't have an extra air conditioner laying around at your house.
And parts degrade just sitting there. Right. We have no place to store this except out, you know, maybe under a pole barn. But for instance, if you have a motor, those motors have literally heaters in the windings to drive off moisture to make sure the interior, the windings inside those big electric motors don't degrade. So even when you're building a new pump station, you get a brand new motor from the vendor. You have to store it in a warehouse. You have to hook it up to electrical connections to make sure that no moisture accumulates that would degrade the windings. Even when you're storing it right from the vendor the day just when you get it, okay, before it's installed. Same with pumps, you know, bearings rust, whether they're pushing water or whether they're sitting in a yard someplace. It's just, it's called entropy. It's just the world we live in. Everything gets old and degrades, whether it's being used or not. And gaskets and those things, again, they're made out of rubber and various materials like that, and they degrade over time just from the ozone in the air. So storing these things, unless it's extremely climate controlled, you're going to end up with something you probably can't use when you actually need it anyway. So,
and additionally, technology is changing. You can have that glass with regard to our water system and the meters, and the old things cheaper. But cost us more. So.
But they're a lot more accurate. And requirements change. You know, if we add another line, transmission main, then duty heads change and things of that nature. So the entire, every impeller, every pump is basically a custom pump because the impellers are pumping different heads, different amounts of water, different horsepower. So every pump for this type of application is specifically made for the engineer's application. And over time, the system changes. So the type of pumps you would purchase for that system are going to change, even though you have old ones in there. So it's a very customized business. It's just the way the water system, the water industry works. Every city is different.
So could we add, in the vein of what is, mm-hmm. what can be done, like, is it possible after a facility is built out like this to add another pump line to it to increase capacity? Or really is that just when you look at the next spot for another tank, and that's how you add additional capacity or what?
But another tank, you know, another 3 million gallon tank is roughly 18 hours worth of water. So
right, but it would come with what you'd install with more pumping, so you'd be able to pump more through the lines, correct? I don't mean for the storage tank side, I mean for like just active pumping.
Mm-hmm. This system is actually designed to add to that pump house, and there's actually a valve on this manifold where you would extend the manifold and add additional pumping spots, basically duplicate this in a spot here. Now you'd have to relocate, you know, transformers, chlorine, there's a whole bunch of stuff in the way, but it was designed to add additional capacity. But I would argue you're probably better off finding a second location
to build something, because this is still running off the same transformer, same power supply, same single fee for the North Texas Municipal Water District. You have a whole lot of one only with this system. So adding to this system, you're not taking care of those redundancies that you really need to look at. So you're probably much better off building another pump station, picking up water from a different location. So you have essentially two independent feeds into the city of Heath. That gives you real redundancy that you can bank on instead of just adding to this thing.
And that supply line is over 20 years old.
Yes, this line was put in about the same time, 2003 and 4. So it's roughly 20 years old as well.
Will the proposed spot up on Rabbit Ridge, will that give us the redundancy for this?
We'll give you another pump station, but it's still fed off of this line. So you've got to pump out of this line to get it to there. Now, Freeman Milliken has run calculations. Evidently, the elevation difference between the new pump station and this, you can literally grab and feed some flow through this 24-inch line without even running the pump over here.
Gravity.
Now, I don't know what that number is, but I was talking to Richard just before the meeting, he thought we could meet our winter demands, like 1 or 2 million gallons per day. We may be able to run gravity. So if there was a failure of this during the winter, we may be able to flow to that second pump station that you're trying to acquire land for through this 24-inch line. But without the pump station, you could not push enough water to that to meet the summer.
And with some conversations we had with Aretha, and probably things we could talk about in the executive session because it involves purchases and other things, you are looking at other alternatives for other lines. I think we can leave it at that.
We are, you know, we'll talk about it during budget tomorrow, but one of the things we're proposing is looking at alternate, you know, doing a study to examine where are feasible alternate sources of water. And if we chose one of those sources of water, what type of infrastructure would it take to make it, to get it into the city?
So that's in, I'm just pointing out that's in the works and we will be discussing it. So
in the morning.
But yeah, I think our messaging needs to include what you were describing earlier, that look, you know, we're still limited to 6 million gallons a day by our supply source. And we were already, you know, heading in that direction of starting to encroach upon that limitation. This obviously didn't help. This probably, made it a couple of weeks premature. It's still painful when your lawn is dying.
Absolutely, sir. You have to sympathize with the people. I mean, they've got an investment. And that's one of the things, though, that we also do need to look at is encouraging, even demanding for new construction that they put in xeriscaping. Because irrigation, we've talked about before, the water pie, all the water rights in this state are spoken for. But we keep adding people and industry. And that means that pie is going to get sliced thinner and thinner and thinner. And the only way to make that work is some of the uses that we currently enjoy are going to have to be severely restricted or go away altogether. And one of the obvious ones is irrigation.
And I can tell you from talking to other public officials, not everybody gets that. And that reality's got to come to everybody. I mean, it's, and we'll talk about that in executive session on some other things, but.
I'm sitting at a market today, it's happening all over the US, especially the central state. I mean, it's happening everywhere. It's not just a Texas issue.
But
it's the rapid growth before planning.
Well, in Austin, used to limit building based on we can't get water to you and whatever else. And then finally their council changed and the developers came in. And now you don't look at Lake Travis, you look at the Colorado River, what's left of it down there. And and that is an absolute reality, and their aquifers drying up and the whole bit. And, you know, but nobody wants to have that conversation. And we are having that conversation, and I'm proud of our citizens when we do. I think when they do understand, they get it. You know, there's always a few outliers, and I'm sorry, Matt, you're having to
be that's what I'm paid for. So I don't mind interacting with the citizens,
because you're the pincushion at this point. So
it allows me to help educate and help them understand, and I enjoy doing that. So.
But we're 1 year into this, and I think within a couple more years of education and good meters, and you know, where people can see what they are using and how. And we can tell them what they're using. Again, I don't know how to program where I'm living right now. I don't know how to program the meter. It just comes and says, I skipped this week, you know, because it rained. And I go, hey, that's great. You know, and I think a lot of people are in the same
boat. Yes.
So the thing that has surprised me being on planning and zoning and being here, of course, I realized that we're a mecca right now, people leaving sewers like California. And I can say it because I lived in that sewer for 25 years. And because...
Yeah, you don't have that on good. Yeah, but go ahead.
No problem.
No, yeah.
What I don't understand that goes on here with this huge, massive influx of people, I personally think we shouldn't be allowing anybody to build a house in our city right now because we don't have water. We went through this last year where we had no water. But when they come in with a plan development and they're going to start building and we're pulling permits, it doesn't get reported to the North District, North Texas Water District. It doesn't get reported at ERCOT that we're going to turn the switch on 65 houses in about 3 months. And so now you have to turn your air conditioner up to 87 and you're sweating in your house because you've got somebody with a health condition and you can't turn it off. So I'm 100% with you. No water in foundations, no injections, no new pools, and actually no new houses for right now.
But it all ties together because when you approve these subdivisions and you say we're going to bring all these people in, nobody looks at schools. And, you know, so when you sit down with the superintendent and he says, you know, that you approve these things, but then when we do a school bond, everybody goes, well, we're not going to pay for that. Well, you approved to bring all these people in. You got to put them in a school. And so all of this ties together. But
there's no cross reporting. So Southern California built a desalinization plant. And my brother used to build those in the Middle East. And then La Nina came and started raining. They took it apart and sold the parts. Well, now they have no water for anything out there. So we don't have that luxury. We have some local lakes, but we don't have an ocean to tap into to desalinate. So we're between a rock and a hard place. So I'm 100% with you. Turn off the tap to the new people and let the old people enjoy the quality of life they've been paying for and have been an active part of this community. And I'll shut up.
No, thank you. All right. Do you have the direction you need, Aretha?
I do. And so now Legal and I will get together to explore exactly what our options can be. And we will come back to you guys as soon as possible.
Okay. No, I think
I do like the idea of some annual kind of thing.
Don't worry about the optics if you don't have the support of this council.
Sure.
Do what you need to do because we are in a crisis. Yeah. You know, so yeah. we don't want to be boiling water.
That can't happen. That can't happen.
We're not going to let that happen.
Can't to avoid it.
Never happened under my watch. I really don't look forward to that.
Right. Neither one of us need that on.
You got to start turning the valves off, and we'll turn the valves off. Right. So
my only request is the same one I just made. Get the
communication.
Get the communication out there.
We will get together after budget tomorrow and start on that.
Thank you, Matt.
You guys are doing a great job and wonderful presentation as always. So, all right. There is no action required on this.